This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Despite a rough couple of weeks, Barack Obama receives a key endorsement from a former Democratic presidential candidate, and Florida and Michigan may have lost all hope of redoing their primaries. For more, we have Mara Schiavo-Campo, digital correspondent for NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, Aaron Aubrey Kaplan of the Los Angeles Times, and Roland Martin, CNN contributor and special correspondent for Essence magazine. Hi, folks.
Hi, Farai.
How are you doing?
So I'm going to start with you, Mara. Today, Bill Richardson endorsed Barack Obama for president. He got huge applause when he said, and I'm quoting here, "Senator Obama opposed the Iraq war from the beginning," and he also said, "End the Iraq war, bring our troops home." It is, of course, the week of the fifth anniversary of the Iraq war. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But will Richardson's endorsement put the brakes on a couple of issues, Mara? One, the bad press that Senator Obama has been getting around the pastor race issue. And two, the idea that he doesn't really resonate with Latinos.
Yeah, I think the answer to both questions is yes. The best thing about this nomination, this endorsement for the Obama campaign, is that it takes the attention off of right, which has been his problem for the last 2 weeks. He says the worst 2 weeks of his campaign. And so this is the best thing that the endorsement is doing for them. In addition, it's one of the reasons that Richardson said that it kind of pushed him over the edge in supporting Obama was that he was very impressed by the race speech. And the speech got really good reviews across the board, pretty much. And so it just kind of instills some confidence in Obama in having dealt with that issue. So those are both good things for them.
Now, when you listen to this, Roland, from, more of a standpoint of the horse race, is this an important horse race moment?
Oh, my God, it's huge. I mean, keep in mind, Bill Clinton went to watch the Super Bowl with Bill Richardson at his home there. I mean, the Clinton campaign is trying desperately to dismiss this endorsement when there was one they wanted. Keep in mind, Bill Richardson was energy secretary under Bill Clinton. He was ambassador to the United Nations under Bill Clinton. He also brings significant foreign policy experience. And so by him endorsing Obama, if they're going to be using him as a surrogate, he now can be one of the chief foreign policy surrogates for Senator Barack Obama when it comes to these national television shows. This endorsement also is going to mean that you're likely going to hear stories coming out, is Bill Richardson a possible vice presidential nominee as well as a result? And so it is no doubt that it helps him. The Clinton camp desperately wanted it, and I don't care how they try to spin it, it is a big blow to them not to have Richardson endorse him, and it does help Obama when it comes to Hispanics, because New Mexico is a swing state, and that's the key. Clinton has talked about a big state strategy. New Mexico becomes a swing state. So does Arizona and some of the other southwestern states. Big, big endorsement by Bill Richardson.
Aaron, I have to move on to another issue. It becomes kind of a hall of mirrors when we talk about covering the presidential race, because we all listen to each other. Mm-hmm. And in an interview with the radio station, Barack Obama called his grandmother a, quote, typical white person. Mm-hmm. He was referring to, some of her less than enlightened words, I suppose, on race. And then everyone was like, oh, you're just painting white people with this one brush. How can you do that? And it seemed like a case where, first people got on him for being kind of down on his grandmother, it mm-hmm. seemed to some people, and then now stereotyping white people. Mm. How does this unfold? I mean, does this specific issue have traction? And secondly, does it take more effort to dig yourself out than to just shut up and be like, you know what, you guys can think whatever you want?
I go for option B, Farai. I think Obama, what I thought was a really brilliant speech, sort of done talking about this. I don't think he will or he should go back and try to sort of correct what he has laid out. I think he's put out one of the truths he laid out was that his grandmother was entirely typical. And by the way, people, what got this whole thing started was this perception that Jeremiah Wright is a typical black person. I mean, that's the inference. He's angry. He raises the specter of the kind of black person white people just don't like. These are things that we have reduced to kind of an irreducible place. I mean, this is the truth, and you really can't get. You can't pretty it up, can't put lipstick on it. A lot of people just want Obama to apologize in a way that he knows that he cannot. And
no, they don't want him to apologize. They want him to disown his pastor, and
right.
they want him
Sorry.
To
apologize.
Disown his church.
That's the word, yes.
That's what they want, and
they
that's
want
the problem with all of this.
Right, go ahead.
Well, you know what? Is this just been an iffy week for all the candidates? And I'm not lumping them all together in that they've had the same experience. On the one hand, they all have had a breach of security of their passport files. We'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, John McCain mistakenly said that the Iranians were training al-Qaeda. Hillary Clinton had the papers released from her days at first as the first lady, and people are pouring through them, hoping desperately for some story to emerge. If you had to rate this week, and, you know, I guess I'll go to you, Mara. If you had to rate this week in terms of, you know, good, bad, or ugly for the presidential race, what would you say?
It was a bad week for all of them. And I think at the end of this week, you have to ask the question, well, who had the less worse week? I mean, whose was the best of the worst? As you mentioned, you know, McCain had a few gaffes in Iraq, which allowed people to, which opened the doors for people to criticize really his qualifications on that front. Hillary had problems with the Florida and Michigan do-overs, which she really wanted, which it doesn't look like are going to happen at all. Obama had problems with right, of course. So they all had really tough weeks. If I had to say who had the toughest week, probably Obama. I mean, the last 2 weeks have been really, really tough on him with everything that's happened with right. Now, you know, you have the new Gallup poll numbers that came out and that show that, you know, that Clinton is ahead. And those numbers were taken before he made his speech on race. So we'll see if that speech actually helped him at all in kind of ending this bad string, so to speak.
No, Farah, I got to say, though,
yes.
the so-called gaffe he made about the typical white person, that speaks volumes, I think, too, again, how uncomfortable we are about race. Mm. We know the point actually exists. Frankly, I don't see it as a bad thing because this is March. If Obama is going to get the nomination, you are going to have to deal with those white ethnic blue collar workers who are not going to truly speak their views to pollsters, and they're going to simply be saying these things on talk radio. And by putting it out there now, you confront the reality, and that is there are people who do not want to vote for him because he's black, the people who do not want to address the issue of race from a black perspective or a white perspective. And so I think by putting it on the table, what is forcing people is to have an actual conversation. The question is, are we in the media going to elevate the conversation, or are we going to ask the same question every day? Is it helping? Is it helping? Is it helping him? Is it hurting him? As opposed to challenging people on their assumptions. That's where it falls on us. And also because you have conservative radio who does not want to move off of this, because we know why. Mm-hmm. Because this is how they've been able to build their infrastructure.
I want to jump in.
So the challenge should be to them too.
Right.
I want to jump in for a second and just reintroduce all of you and the topics in case folks are just tuning in. This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. This is our weekly Reporters Roundtable. We're talking to Mara Schiavo-Campo. I just murdered your name. I'm sorry.
That's all right. You did pretty well.
Mara Schiavo-Campo with NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, Aaron Aubrey Kaplan of the Los Angeles Times, and Roland Martin of CNN and Essence Magazine. So we're talking politics, and I just want to go to you, Aaron, and is there anything really to say about this passport breach, the idea that the data on the three major candidates is just, you know, has been distributed in ways it shouldn't have been? Are you surprised? Is there any news there?
Farah, nothing surprises me anymore, period. But, you know, it has like whiffs of Watergate to me. I mean, we don't really know why this happened, although we can certainly speculate. But obviously, I think the cheap information in looking at someone's passports to get the social security number, and then you can dig up credit reports and all kinds of great information. I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting that, as someone pointed out in a news report, these employees, there were two who were fired, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And we did not learn about this breach until after those employees were fired. So it makes it more difficult for action to be taken against them. So it's almost as if someone, you know, they were fired quickly because someone knew the consequences, you know, what would happen when this got out. So it's just so bizarre, as you said, this hall of mirrors. Condoleezza Rice apologizing to Obama, saying she did not know. She seems not know a lot for someone in charge of the State Department. And so I have to say I'm glad that this has come out, because, frankly, this probably goes on all the time, and we just don't know. So I'm actually glad that, you know, as ugly as this is, it's being brought to light.
You know, this
great
reminds
for Democrats.
Me.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's great for Democrats.
Yes.
I mean, it's huge for Democrats, Farai.
Okay, why?
Because the Democrats, look, this is another opportunity for, by them having now the House and the Senate, they can actually now call for congressional hearings.
Right.
You have subpoenas calling people down to both chambers. And so they can turn this into whatever they want to. This thing may last. We don't, look, it could be innocent. It could be more complex. This thing could go on for 2, 3, 4 months, an opportunity for them to cast the Bush administration as trying to go after the two candidates. And so because also Secretary Rice revealed that Clinton's records were breached in 2007. Well, why didn't we hear about that? And so the Democrats, this is nirvana for them.
Now, this reminds me in a weird way a little bit of this whole, remember when Britney Spears had her medical records tampered with by staff? I mean, people, there's the saying mainly in the techie community, information wants to be free. And Mara, is it just one of these things where people are going to snoop no matter what, or is this something that has much bigger political implications?
Well, you know, right now we don't know. And that's, I mean, where things stand right now, we just have a lot of questions and very few answers. Could it be, as they called it, kind of a nosiness, so to speak, where you had some employees who were doing a little bit of snooping because they were curious at where people had been or some personal information? Sure, it could be just that. But could it be something deeper? You know, in 1992, supposedly they were looking for damaging information on Bill Clinton about wanting to renounce his citizenship. So could it be something deeper or politically motivated? It could be. And could it be absolutely nothing, just human beings being nosy and curious like they were with Britney Spears' medical records? It could be. So it's our job now to figure out exactly what's going on.
I want to move on to yet another topic, and this is one where, gosh, there is going to be blood on the floor. First Florida, now Michigan. Michigan's plans for a primary do-over have all but collapsed. The state Senate went on a two-week recess without passing legislation to have a new Democratic primary. How much of a blow is this to both Florida and Michigan voters? You know, I guess I'm going to ask you this first, Mara.
Well, for the voters, I mean, it's hard to say because there were some voters in Michigan who, you know, changed their ballot and Democratic voters who voted Republican because they said their vote wasn't going to count. And so it seems, I mean, that would suggest to me a certain acceptance of the fact that that they were told your vote's not going to count. And so they decided they were going to vote, at least have their vote counted in some capacity. So it's hard to say, you know, how the voters feel about it because, you know, perhaps they've accepted it. Perhaps they want to fight it. But the bigger question is, what are we going to do moving forward? I mean, the issue of a do-over, that ship has sailed. It's pretty much dead in the water. So the bigger question now is, how are the delegates going to be seated, if at all? And if it's a 50-50 split, you know, that's pretty much a wash. Is that even worthwhile doing? I mean, there are so many questions now as to how to resolve this mess. And it is such a huge mess. And, you know, I heard one commentator say, and it may have even been Roland, that, you know, Democrats sure know how to snatch victory from defeat from the jaws of victory, rather.
Let me jump in for a second because I want to play.
Jack Cafferty.
I want to play a little bit of Hillary Clinton's speech during a rally in Detroit, Michigan.
Here in Michigan, 600,000 people turned out on a cold and snowy day in January to cast your votes. And you made it abundantly clear that you wanted your voices to be heard and your votes to be counted. And in Florida, 1.7 million people did exactly the same. Now, these nearly 2.5 million Americans are in danger of being shut out of our democratic process. I think that's wrong, and frankly, it is un-American.
Now, I want to ask you this, Roland. In October, Senator Clinton talked to New Hampshire Public Radio about the Michigan primary, and she said, quote, "I personally did not think it made any difference whether or not my name was on the ballot. You know, it's clear this election they're having is not going to count for anything." So why the change in position?
Well, because she's losing. You know, and this whole grandstanding by Senator Clinton, oh, stop and sit down. She's losing. When she was leading, she had no problem with that. Not only that, people should ask the question, how many people who serve on her campaign sit on the Rules Committee? It was a unanimous decision to strip them. The people in Florida and Michigan, you should not be mad at Howard Dean and the DNC. You shouldn't be mad at Senator Obama. You shouldn't be mad at Senator Clinton. You should be mad at the bums who represent you in those two states who chose to be so arrogant that they say we are going to jump ahead of everybody else. Here's the one thing that everybody keeps overlooking. 48 states followed the rules. 2 broke the rules. What are the two states crying right now saying our voices are not being heard? Florida and Michigan. And the Democrats keep complaining about the Republicans in Florida. It was a Democratic legislature and a Democratic governor led by also Senator Carl Levin in Michigan, a Democrat. They disenfranchised themselves. And I do feel for the voters, but it was the elected officials. So if I was in Florida and Michigan, throw those bums out of office. They're the ones who disenfranchise you.
All right, Aaron, we only have time for a quick hit. Who do you think should be responsible for making this right? Is it Howard Dean? Who is it?
No, I was rolling on this one. This decision was made by the party, and it was a very quote unquote democratic process. And he's absolutely right. It's only an issue now because, of course, every delegate vote counts. Every vote counts. But we're just gonna have to do without Florida and Michigan. And I'm frankly glad that we're moving on and leaving it alone, because I just think it'd be more of a mess to do a do over. That seems to me more problematic in the end than just moving on. I mean, so I agree with Roland. You know, you go after the people who made this decision to disenfranchise themselves. I mean, this wasn't about people, you know, the people getting cheated. This wasn't about election fraud. This was about a very clear decision. And if they don't like the decision, then, like Roland said, throw the bumps out of office.
All right. On that note, thank you guys so much and happy Friday.
Thank you.
Thanks a bunch.
We've been talking with Aaron Aubrey Kaplan of the Los Angeles Times, Roland Martin, CNN contributor and special correspondent for Essence Magazine. He was at WBEZ in Chicago. And Mara Schiavo-Campo, digital correspondent for NBC's Nightly News with Brian Williams. She joined us from our New York studios.